Well, thank you so much, Mark, for joining me this morning. I know you've got a very busy day. You've just mentioned you've got a dentist appointment, you've got two conferences, one in another country. Is this a typical kind of day for you where you're jetting around the world, but from your own home in Welsh Valley?
Yeah, definitely since lockdown. I'm in Africa in 2 weeks' time, which is exciting as well. So yeah, you can literally do talks from around the world now from your attic, which is great, you know. But I like the face to face. I do love speaking face to face as well, you know, Tracy. So yeah, definitely. It's about raising awareness and educating people about parents, really.
Yeah. So one of my first questions then is going to be, where do you get your drive from? You know, this is a question people ask me, and I don't, you know, part of this series is exploring this in other people. So that kind of force that gets you up in the morning, that gets you out, that keeps you going, you know, even after things that aren't maybe working out, that keeps you going. What is that experience for you? Where does it come from?
I probably had this since a child, you know, growing up in the valleys. Unfortunately, school wasn't for me, which I know now, but sport was, you know. I went to youth club, and basically somebody just told me, Stan Norris, youth worker, I said, you know, Mark, you can do anything in your life. Don't let anyone tell you can't do anything in your life. And I believed him, you know, and went on to be a British champion. So, and you know, I've got something when I focus on hyper focus. I focus on it and I can't see anything else. It's like a something that needs to be changed within me myself or helping other people now, as you know. So I think I've always had it inside, but it's actually nurturing it and being mentored. Things I couldn't do, like for instance, with my dyslexia, you know, but obviously gone on to write the books and all sorts of things. So with that support in place, I think anyone can do anything really, but it comes from a lived experience as well, definitely 100% for me personally.
How easy was it for you to reach out and find that support and put that support in place for yourself so that you could then do all of these amazing things that you're doing in the world?
Yeah, definitely. I think I know my strengths, and I now ask for help for my weaknesses. It could be as simple as an invoice, you know. I know it sounds really trivia, but something like a, you know, sending an invoice, I just can't grasp it sometimes. It doesn't fill me with passion, you know, the admin stuff, you know. So if it's something I love and I'm passionate about, then I get excited, and then that brings my energy. And I think having ADHD helps for me personally as well. And diagnosed until I was 40 years of age, so I'm very I know my strengths now for the ADHD, but obviously like ADHD there is sort of other things like anxiety and other things can kick in as well, you know, overwhelmed doing so much as well, you know. So it's got its good strengths, superpower some people call, but obviously it has its days as well, like a lot
Yeah.
of people as well, you know.
And, you know, apart from those kind of days where the superpower isn't so tangible in your experience, where has it gone? What about, you know, times in your life? And I'm thinking, you know, after reading your memoir, Daddy Blues, you know, times in your life where that life force, that passion, that ignition, you weren't feeling it. Could you talk a little bit about that and the contrast of the experience?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, after leaving school at 15, I had no qualifications, you know. I basically going into the factory, and you know, years ago, obviously the 90s, obviously. You know, it's a different area where, unfortunately, the rave scene. And so I did go down a different route, you know, 6 years, 7 years of just drinking, using, you know, obviously alcohol and drugs and stuff like that, which, and so I was off par a bit, a lot, you know, during that time, I'll be honest with you. But I think meeting my wife, Michelle, you know, and going into sales and realizing that I had strengths I didn't know I had as well, you know, I never thought I'd be public speaking now, you know, and especially in school at 8 years of age, being scared to go on a stage, you know, and because I used to have a big stutter and my mind's constantly racing, sometimes can't get words out. So I think my strength has grown confidence wise, you know, self-esteem. And then, you know, when people tell me you're really good at sales and, you know, asking me to join their company, your confidence gets better and better and builds up, you know. I think money was a big part then in sales. And I think, but it, you know, the car, you know, all the material stuff that I'm not really interested in now, I'll be honest with you. But I think my passion changed really after Michelle had emergency C-section, and then obviously I witnessed that trauma, And it's the first time I honestly thought that my wife and baby's going to die in that situation. And Tracy, like I mentioned before, you know, I worked in security since that time, and nothing worse than thinking your wife and baby's going to die in that situation. But I think something in there changed me as a person. I think for the better now, absolutely, you know, I wasn't the same person going back into sales. I realized that money wasn't going to make you happy, you know, and something else I needed to do. So that's when I went back to the youth club a year later and started volunteering and coaching children, young people, who I'm mentoring them, you know, like a standard for me and helping them grow as a person as well. So I think something inside me helping people actually helped me do, you know, and I got, yeah, such a reward helping. You know, people say, oh, voluntary work, you know, no, I get so much out of voluntary work and the work I'm doing, actually knowing that I have the people getting that support and help now as well, you know. So that grew then, and obviously started working in mental health then in 2007, 2008, after, unfortunately, the young suicide in Bridgend, you know, I started to educate myself on mental health. And still didn't get help then. You know, it wasn't until 2 years later, after another event in my family life, you know. But yeah, I've just got a passion for, like, helping people. I know a lot of people say that, but I just love it. And my wife loves it as well. We get so much out of it as well, you know.
Yeah, that really resonates with me. The sort of one of the things that drives me is helping people. And if I don't feel what I'm doing is of service to someone in some way, I'm just sort of like, what's the point? So I'm really relational, you know. I couldn't go off on my own in my own world, in my own, you know, up a mountain or something, like, for a year. Be just like, yeah, you know, where's the connection? I know what it is for me. It's the connection with other humans, you know, and how to be in connection with others. So from those early days, 2007, 2008, as you kind of came into mental health, you're helping others, and you're also beginning to get help for yourself in your own journey, in your own healing process. How did those two things kind of grow together? Were they part of each other? So by helping others, you could help yourself. I mean, was that important to have both?
Yeah, definitely. I think, well, after I lost my grandfather to dementia, and my mother was diagnosed with cancer within 6 weeks of each other, 6-7 weeks, whatever it was. And everything, all the trauma I had dealt with in my life basically came to head at that point. And I had no choice, you know, my body basically just shut down, really. I was physically fit, Tracy. I believe it or not, I won a Welsh kickboxing championship a couple of months before. And so physical health was fine. I was really fit, but mentally it was impacting my mental health. And I obviously entered community mental health services, where a couple of years later I found out I had ADHD, and I never diagnosed with any PTSD or PND, as we know now. So, but I think that was a turning point, really. That was another turning point where I was working in a secure unit in Cardiff, and 8 weeks into my recovery, I was put on medication at the time, counselling, CBT, mindfulness, all these positive coping skills, which I never knew about, because obviously anything that stressed me, or I'd use alcohol, you know, because it goes back with, as my father's a miner, my grandfather's a miner, as, you know, any problem, let's go to the pub, let's have a pint, you know. So I created this negative coping skill. But then I started educating myself about positive meditation, which I'm really into a lot more now. Even my wife, Michelle, is as well. All these positive coping skills I didn't know about. And I started educating myself more and more. And then it was unreal, because I was in a gym, you know, from up Ogwa Valley, and I spoke to a guy in a gym and said, oh, can I borrow the weights? And he said, yes, I got to go to NHS Prams. And I said, oh, what's NHS Prams? Oh, he said, my wife's got postnatal depression. I said, no way, my wife had postnatal depression too, no way. All of a sudden, side by side, I had a conversation. I told him more things in 5 minutes than I told my best friends all my life, you know. So he understood, there was a connection there. I decided, let's set up a group called Fathers Reaching Out in Bridgend, and it just grew and grew and grew, and obviously getting the media attention and raising awareness for fathers, because, as you know, with perinatal mental health, we only just started talking the last 10 years, but especially with fathers, it was hardly anyone talking about dads. I know they can struggle with bonding. I always say to people, when you think of postnatal depression, is it one thing that fathers can't experience, you know, guilt, not good enough, you know, everything that the mums can experience with PND, There's not one I can think of that dads can't experience, you know, what about social services, all these things. So we started opening up conversations then. And yeah, just from then, started working with Dr. Jane Handley, then in 2012, and Jane educated me up and worked with academics. You know, like, you know, Tracy, I'm not from an academic background, but all this stuff I was putting down and telling the professionals, and then it just grew from there then, really. But it was really just connecting to somebody in the gym. And what was ironic was really the lady who set up NHS Prams was Gail James, who was a CPN nurse who was caring for my wife, Michelle, at the time. So it was just like law of attraction, universe, whatever you want to call it. It was all coming together. It was just meant to be. It was unreal when I think of it now, because Gail asked Michelle to do public speaking. Obviously, Michelle never went down perinatal mental health route because she went more mental health, general mental health. And it's me who's doing the talks around the country or world, whatever you want to call it now. So it's, I think sometimes it's just meant to be sometimes, you know, to help people.
Yeah, I mean, and it is around the world. Like, how far have you gone in terms of where you're sharing your story, your books? Where have you been in the world, Mark, in terms of delivering this work? And
awareness? Yeah, oh gosh. I've spoken, like, you know, obviously a lot now online, but, you know, I've been Australia, America, New Zealand and talks. And then obviously my book is being translated in Chinese, Korean, doing a conference, like I said, in Africa, all Europe. So yeah, it's crazy. And I set them International Father's Mental Health Day then 5 years ago, which is recognised now on the Time to Change calendar as well, like alongside World Mental Health Day. And that's growing as well. So I think, yeah, it's just gone from just a setting a support group up and then getting that media attention, obviously going on TV, radio stations around the world and different things. And, you know, it's funny, Tracy, I did a talk in Colombia, you know, with a translator. And that was something I've never done before, you know. Welsh, somebody from Wales, and trying to translate about birth trauma, PTSD, that fathers can experience that, because obviously witnessing a traumatic birth is an anxiety disorder, witnessing, that's what PTSD is like, you know. So, yeah, it's just gone from there, really. And I can go on and on about the film coming out.
Yeah, film. You do. I've seen that. How did that film come about? Is that, so that's linked to your book, Daddy Blues?
Yeah, so Daddy Blues was a memoir. And then I did an academic book with Jane called Fathers and Perinatal Mental Health. And then we've done journals in the Nursing Times, BAGM, Health Visiting, all that stuff. So working with Jane basically has helped me massively, because I put the information down, we have a discussion, and then she references all the stuff I can't do as an academic, you know. And so we work really well together. And then, so the book, Daddy Blues, obviously came out. And then, yeah, a wonderful doctor called Pavanda Shargill. She's a actress, producer, and works in NHS as a doctor, mental health, and she's amazing. And just approached me and said, we want to do a script. And then it's going to be on IMDb, is it? Amazon Prime, shortly. So it's Daddy Blues. It's on there. It's coming out really shortly. And it's an education film, really, to educate for parents that, you know, even looking after a partner with post-depression, up to 50% dads can be impacted with a mental health massive. And since COVID, we've seen even higher rates of anxiety in fathers. So I think on the back of COVID now, we're going to see more people changing for a more parental mental health as well, more holistic approach, not just for fathers, but same gender parents. All parents should be entitled to, because it has far better outcomes for the whole family and child's development. And in my experience, work with parents, I work with a midwife. We still do sessions. We get the parents together as well. You know, communication is massive amongst parents. And sometimes it's mostly the mums that phone me up and say, Mark, you know, I'm fine, or being supported. My husband is struggling. And that's having an impact on my mental health and the relationships and all sorts of things. And of course, that can have an impact on our child's development. If dad is depressed, he's less likely to read, you know, sing and have that play that's so important in the role of the father as well. So my work is more, not just fathers, it's all about parents for me, really. Parents as well, you know. So, yeah, a lot of good things have come out, something bad, Tracy. A lot of good
Amazing.
things.
Well, it's interesting because we've talked a little bit about my journey, and for me, the changing point of my life was also having a child, emergency cesarean, under general anaesthetic, so far away from what I had hoped for, had planned for, and major birth trauma. And that was 14 years ago. And at the time, that wasn't spoken about. Nobody mentioned trauma, even as a thing. I wouldn't have even put it with it. And it was many years, about a year and a half before I noticed in my body things like I couldn't breathe into my belly. I was on a movement workshop and I was like, oh, wow, I can only breathe as far as my chest. And so I started noticing things in my body. I couldn't see the patterns almost in the thinking that were being caused because of it, but I could feel it in my belly. And I think especially if it's a first-time parent, there's nothing to measure it against. So I was just like, oh, it was just a difficult experience. So I was putting that narrative on it of, oh, it was just difficult, and eventually it'll be all right, sort of thing. Many years before I realized, number one, that it was trauma, and I saw it myself because I made a video and I could see myself freezing. I'm like, oh my God, I'm freezing. That's trauma. And then the journey to begin to heal that. And for me, what I feel really passionate about is trauma can be healed, especially if it's from a single event. That's actually very straightforward to heal. And yet people still who I know will talk about will say to me, oh, I have birth trauma. And I go, kind of connect and like, are you getting help or support to be able to heal it? And people still don't even know that that's an option, I feel,
Yeah,
on a wide
definitely.
level.
Absolutely. And a lot of mums, like Michelle, was diagnosed with PND, postnatal depression, but when she did the timeline of trauma, the biggest trauma in life was the PTSD, the birth trauma. And like she, Michelle had EDMR treatment. And I'm not saying that works for everyone, but it certainly had a, yeah, it was, it didn't, it was, and that was years later, years later. So a lot of mums, there's an overlap sometimes. Mums, and yourself, Tracy, sometimes they need that different treatment, to PND, to trauma, where I'm very person-centered as well. It's find out what works for that person. And some dads I speak to, gosh, it's only acknowledgement that there's another father who've experienced those experiences. You may not see them again, obviously the more mild, moderate end, but a lot of fathers overthinking, is it me, is anything I've done? Or I'm witnessing a traumatic birth. Obviously, still to this day, nothing worse for me personally, feeling helplessness, and having a little baby, first time I had a little baby, my son Ethan, and then you've got to walk down to get him weighed. I honestly thought I was going to drop him. The anxiety I was feeling, anxious. I never held a little baby. I had to walk down the massive corridor, and obviously there was no debrief on the thing, obviously. And yeah, but it's all about education, is and that's what's important. Why we're doing the why you're doing the podcast is to raise awareness and say that I'm going into more post-traumatic growth next year as well, and positive psychology, and say, look, from our bad experience, you can actually, once you get that support and be healed, you can actually help other people by using your lived experience or whatever field you want to go in as well, so it's, I think without that experience, I wouldn't be speaking to you today, and I certainly wouldn't be doing the youth work. I'd probably be stuck in sales in a job that had no real meaning or purpose, as it has now. I'm not saying, there's a lot of people, good friends of mine in sales, but there was no meaning, there was no purpose for me personally. And I got more meaning, I got more, not financially, I'd be honest, I'm probably worse off I am than I was in 96, but I get more, I just get up in the morning, it's a drive. I used to get up at 4 in the morning, just go to London, because I know that when I do a talk, someone will actually get it, understand it, and that has a ripple effect throughout the family then as well.
Yeah, I mean, I hear as you're describing, I feel like it's a sense of purpose, a real mission, that there's a reason to get up in the morning, and there's a real, why you're doing what you're doing. You can see the impacts in people's lives, one life, a family, a whole community, and it ripples out. So
Absolutely.
I wonder about this, this area of work. So you're branching out a bit more, and it's post-traumatic growth, and I'd Maybe bring it back to where we are in the valley. So we live in the same valley. You know, this is where we kind of first met. You know, I knew about your work before you'd known me, and I reached out to, and we met at the library.
And we did our TEDx talk.
We did our TEDx talk together, TEDx exactly, talk. Yeah. And so I find a lot of resonance, you know, between both of our work, really, of coming from a very difficult traumatic experience, realizing what it was, getting the support, doing the healing, and then sharing that, I suppose, path of healing with others and motivating and letting people know it's okay, and you know, you can move through this and we can get the support, help you get the support you need. But I wonder about I wonder a lot about trauma, you know, because I think it's still very, it's not spoken about very much, particularly in mental health. So I ran an arts and mental health charity for 3 years in Gwent, and there was a lot of focus on supporting people to manage their mental health. So, you know, we did creative sessions, creative writing, art, filmmaking, you know, whatever it was. And they're incredible tools for any human being to have, to be able to just open up, you know, and kind of connect with the deeper currents in our lives, or just to have fun or whatever, distract ourselves. But not very often trauma is used even within those services. And actually what I would you know, I'm not a medical health professional, but what I see, because I see it in people's bodies, like, is that there's a load of trauma here, and complex trauma, you know. So if we've got difficult childhoods, if we've got any adverse childhood experiences, poverty in particular, so that goes throughout the life. And so sometimes we have this one big experience where there's a major trauma, and actually it sort of stacks up against the childhood trauma. But that by healing one, we begin to heal all of that. You know, that's the way trauma is. It's not in different parts of our body. It's like it's just here. So once I heal one, it just kind of begins to clear out. And so I guess my question is, you know, we're here in the valleys, you know, where there are varying levels of deprivation and poverty still, you know, maybe not so much in Ogmore Valley, but certainly in the valleys around us, we see, you know, so the impact on children and adults' lives of low levels of unemployment, generation. Absolutely. And that's generational. So it's through the last three generations or whatever. So, you know, where do you think this sort of, what do you think is a possibility for whole communities, I suppose, to heal trauma, so that we can become healthier and fuller and more connected ultimately with each other? What's the potential for that?
Yeah, definitely. I you know, and the work you're doing, Tracy, and I was just saying it, is that, you know, I worked in a Heath hospital, and we've done a lot of sessions of art therapy and writing things. That's what I do. I get out my head, I write it down, you know, various things. And film, plays, you know, all this stuff is art therapy is huge. It should be more in services, I believe, definitely, because I've seen how, not with parents, but people with, obviously I did a project with around people over 50s with discharge. So we use all these different ways. We brought people in, like certain things that you're doing as well, you know, and we've seen the benefits as well, you know. So, but going back to the valleys, it's definitely, you know, especially in the 90s, you know, unemployment, late 80s, because obviously when the pits closed, the identity, you know, my father was a miner, all of a sudden he wasn't a miner, and he had to go to another job, and out to the valley, communities started to drift apart a bit, you know, even where a lot of people just used to stay in the valleys, and, you know, there'd be more. Luckily enough, we've got good two youth clubs still, which many valleys haven't. And but like you said, the reason I say that was there was a big community. Now I feel like that sense of community has come back. And even in COVID, we've seen a big sense of community where, you know, even in my street, we were doing bingo and all sorts of things, you know, and in safe distancing in our gardens also. So I think there's a big connection. We need to bring more people together, community, and connect to each other, because that I've seen the mass as here. We tend to be like doing over here, where if we can connect everyone together, that's huge. Now that's a debt in itself. And I think when I'm in, like, even the youth club, there's a bit of a family of us within that youth club, you know, as well. So we help the people, but I get more out of it because I'm in a community where we're creating stuff and we're doing things and we got purpose and stuff. So I definitely feel that community and bringing people together through art and other all different ways can actually help people. Absolutely, yeah, definitely. Rather than isolate a lot of people as well, you know. But
yeah, I think that's what I feel, absolutely. And I mean, it's very obvious in the last year with COVID and the social isolation. And what I've noticed is, like, within my own, I don't do it now, but I really recognize it through my life, is that my kind of trauma response, I suppose, is to isolate myself. You know, so this is where the kind of overthinking comes, is for whatever reason, I feel I need to disconnect from other people. And then, you know, I'm in this inner world, which can be, you know, incredibly uncomfortable and terrifying. So, yeah, finding those ways to be in connection with each other just allows that expression. And I think sometimes it's like just the emotional connection is really important when we connect in that way, of having a laugh, of, you know, yeah, telling a story, of, you know, whatever it is that we're expressing our emotions, and that is really important just for the health.
Tracy, you just remind me, actually, I think my recovery was even quicker for me personally, only that when I set the group up, obviously it was only 8 weeks after, I think, speaking to the gentleman, Brian, you don't mind me sharing, you know, he was a big part of me when it started. And then realizing there was not just me going through this trauma and what we went through and stuff, because it gave me that sense then. So that helped me in my recovery even quicker, I feel. All of a sudden I'm starting focusing on the positives of it rather than the negative side of what's happened. And then say, gosh, and that's what I, you know, keep saying about the area I'm going to. There's so many people who've gone through a lot of trauma. I think trauma is huge. I think, you know, I think the stats are, you know, people suffer from PTSD is anything from 1 in 3, I think, probably more. 1 in 3. PTSD UK do a lot of stats and stuff like on that. And people don't realise, like you said, adverse childhood experiences, you know, traumatised for various reasons, as you know. So, but it is more complex sometimes with some fathers I speak to as well. There's not that just that big trauma. There's other issues before they become parents. Yeah. And that's what we're trying to raise awareness of as well. There's a lot of fathers who have gone through this trauma, and then the lack of sleep, of course, that can have a massive impact on your mental health. So you're not just dealing with the adverse childhood experience, for instance, or your bipolar, schizophrenia, whatever it is. You're dealing with the lack of sleep, or you're witnessing a traumatic birth, or your partner's with postnatal depression. All this is getting overwhelmed then in a short period of time. So, you know, that's why we're trying to raise more antenatal classes and education, get the fathers and parents to get that support early on. At least then they only got to deal with that if they do go for that traumatic experience after, you know, at least they can focus on that then rather than all the other things, if that makes sense, you know.
Completely. And the way I would describe it is that, like, where that would be increasing people's capacity for resilience, because resilience is being able to have very difficult experiences, but we can manage them in some way. You know, we can, because ultimately we were able to feel the feelings. You know, when trauma happens, it's too overwhelming. We cut off from the feeling because, you know, it feels literally like we're going to die. That is basic kind of explanation of what trauma is in the body. And so if we have more resilience because we've done some of that healing, we've got networks of support around us, we're far more likely to be able to feel really difficult experiences, and therefore it's not trauma, it's then just needs a bit of emotional unpacking or whatever afterwards.
You know, that's spot on. I've learned that through my talks as well. You know, I remember when I first started doing my talk, gosh, I used to have anxiety in my belly, and then I'd take it to a point and then I'd have to just move on quickly. And I, like you said, you know, it was only the other day, so it's something triggered off something the other day, like, you know, I never thought that before as well, you know. So, you know, this is 16 years ago this happened, you know, it's a long time. But yeah, you're right. I think, like I said, like early on, if I hadn't gone through that experience, it's made me a better person. It's actually made me a better person. There's the one thing I do say, because I do talk about adverse childhood experience a lot. I say, look, you know, this experience, obviously, it's good to educate yourself about it, because then you can get the help. And then, obviously, you know, you're more aware of it, understanding, and get that support in place. But also, like, for instance, a lot of good things come out of something bad. Previously, years ago, people used to say, oh, you've gone through a bad experience. There's no way possibly you could do this now. You're broken, sort of thing. That is so, I know I've met so many people who have gone through such traumatic experiences and actually come out even stronger, more resilient, understanding, and help loads of people. So I think it's strength. Sometimes after you've had a support, you can move on. And that's what drives me. That's what really drives me, is not knowing that anyone else is going to go through what Michelle went through, and obviously what I went through as well, that's what gets me up in the morning.
So what do you do, Mark, for yourself to, keep yourself healthy and strong? What kind of things do you have in your day-to-day life, that you are important to you to keep kind of this capacity to keep moving and keep going?
I think lockdown has been really good to me, I'll be honest. I know it sounds really crazy to say that, and because I've used the mountains more, walking more, not running around everywhere. I haven't been out the attic since March, it's probably a bit. So Michelle lets me out now and again. But I really connected with nature. I've connected with more meditation. I realise that I don't have to do loads of stuff. I can just do enough and then look after myself. Because if you can't look after yourself, how are you going to help other people as well? So I think it was just like when 100 miles an hour to the point I was running around everywhere. And I did have a dip in lockdown. And I think it was the first month I had a massive dip because I was just running around everywhere. And all of a sudden, but then I reframed it and I looked, gosh, something good can come out of this, and went online, put all my stuff online, because I lost all my business, everything, all face to face. It just went. Mm-hmm. I was literally done a bit of work in a hospital, just to get some income in, and then it just changed then. So even that, something bad has happened in COVID, and something positive have actually come out for me. And I think I'll never go back to where I was pre-COVID, because I just want a bit of half and half. I love walking. I'm I'm healthier now. I'm not so stressed. My wife, that benefits Michelle and Ethan. I'm more involved with it. I've always been involved with, obviously, with Ethan and with the football and stuff like that. But I've just got more time now. I was thinking the other day, gosh, I don't want to be going back everywhere, because I just like get up in the morning. Even, I know it sounds really, coming from valleys, my mates, I don't tell my mates all this stuff, I connect, walking, meditation. I'll just go up in mountains and do a bit of meditation and stuff like that. And it's a different mindset sometimes in the valley, sometimes Tracy and I, sometimes it's, but that's coming through as well. I think a lot of people come on to me now and get anxiety as well, and depression, because we've seen a massive increase in mental health difficulties in people from bed, and fathers as well, high rates of anxiety in the antenatal period, which we haven't seen before. So fathers more anxious now, unfortunately. But for me personally, I hate to say it, because obviously a lot of people I know have been affected by COVID massively, but a lot of good things have come out of it as well. Mm-hmm. Connecting with people that I wouldn't have connected with as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, that's the play of life, is that when there's difficult experiences, there are also easy experiences. Like, both are here. And it's always interesting if we're having the opposite of somebody else, how we kind of have to go, oh, I don't want to say that I'm having a great time, actually, but I am having a great time,
Yeah.
And that's really important. I see, for me, a lot I've seen in the last year of how people don't want to share their joy, really, because the assumption is that everyone's having a difficult time. And I just sort of think that when times are dark and, things in the world are undergoing massive changes, what we need more than ever is the people with the joy to be very bright. So you become like a kind of lighthouse beacon that, if people are falling off a little bit where they're used to standing and their lives are changing, that they have something to just light up the way a little bit, something to orient towards. So it's not all a sea of, I don't know. And so I feel that when I speak with you, I'm just so glad for your light and your brightness. It's it's joyful.
Oh, no, I, like I said, you know, we lost my mother-in-law in October, you know, during COVID, and she was living with us. And obviously that was traumatic because I found her in the morning, you know, I won't go too much into that. And, but, you know, so it has been plain sailing during COVID, obviously, Michelle. And but even Michelle, you know, going for that grief process as well, you know, and that that takes time. That's a process in itself to take time to go for that grief. But even, you know, Michelle is looking at things differently now as well, and looking at other areas to help other people as well, you know. So, yeah, you know, it's, a lot of good things have come out to something bad as well. During COVID, I think, for me personally and Michelle, and you have to be you have to be, otherwise, you know, that's the thing with ADHD. I have to look after my mental health, you know, the overthinking, the intrusive thoughts, you know, mind's racing constantly all the time. It's not saying I'm fixed. I always will have to look after my mental health, but I found since COVID I'm looking after my mental health even better now during this time.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for coming and speaking with me today. And
I've enjoyed it. That was quick, Tracy. And I just want to thank you for asking me to come on and stuff. And it's great. I could talk to you all day, you know, definitely. Just getting my teeth done now and then, my toothache, and then back to work again. So thank you, Tracy. Honestly, appreciate it for asking me, and definitely. And yeah, after COVID, we'll have to have a catch up. All the TEDx talk speakers, definitely, that'd be great. I know I missed the last one, so definitely.
Great.